Tuesday's runoff election for a borough assembly seat isn't over yet. The 668 questioned and absentee ballots have been counted, showing incumbent Kevin Herron leading challenger Andy Carella by 56 votes, reversing Carella's earlier 151-vote lead, and Carella may ask for a recount. Carella was at the borough offices this morning, according to Deputy Borough Clerk Gay Patrick, inquiring about a recount. Earlier in the week, before the final tally was in, Carella had stated to a Fairbanks Daily News Miner reporter that he was concerned about attempted rigging of the results. Herron has previously noted that in prior attempts at election for public office, questioned and absentee ballots have won him the seat. If Carella were to ask for a recount, the borough has no formal provisions for dealing with the request, according to Patrick.
The borough has no provision for a recount. It would be entirely up to the assembly.
And what action would the assembly have to take?
They would have to either grant the recount, and according to the attorney, the only provisions he can see for granting the recount would be election fraud.
And would there be any grounds for that sort of allegation?
I don't feel that there are any, no.
As of this afternoon, Carella had not requested a recount. It will be November 8th until the election will be certified, and if there is to be a recount, the method and means of payment will be determined. Karen McPherson in Fairbanks.
We've always been a horsey family. At least my side of it has. My grandfather used to ride every morning on the downs behind Brighton, all dressed up in bowler hat and jockeys. He used to look splendid, indulging in equitation, he called it.
Equitation?
I remember I told him how that came from equus.
Equus?
The Latin word for horse.
The Fairbanks Drama Association and the University of Alaska Drama Department are co-producing Peter Schaefer's Equus. The Tony Award-winning production is the first joint effort between the two organizations. Production costs were split, the cast is a mix of community and university folk, and staffing is also divided between members of the two organizations. Richard Ussery, a visiting professor from North Carolina, is the director. In 1972, he received his BA in theater from the University of Alaska in Fairbanks. Though Ussery claims that any brief description of Equus can be misleading, here is his summary of the play.
Basically, it is this. Equus is a mystery play, and what you're trying to figure out is why in the world did this 17-year-old boy blind six horses with a metal spike? It's an appalling, horrifying act, and the show is about how did it come to happen. It's told in the dramatic present, and through characters, if it were a movie, it'd be called a flashback. I don't know exactly what it's called when you do it on stage, but you get a chance to see the character of the boy relive some of the scenes throughout his life that it had a great deal to do with this. Mm-hmm. Some people would call this show a psychological drama. That sounds very heavy and I'm afraid would turn people off. This is not Ibsen, folks. This is Peter Schaefer. And it's really a mystery play, a psychological mystery, perhaps I'd go that far. But the driving question through the show is, why? Why did something like this happen?
If you want my opinion, it's the Bible that's responsible for all this.
Why?
Well, look at it yourself. Boy spends night after night having this stuff read into him. An innocent man tortured to death. The thorns driven into his head, nails into his hands, a spear jammed through his ribs. It can mark anyone for life, that kind of thing. I'm not joking. The boy was absolutely fascinated by all that. He was always mooning over religious pictures. I mean, real kinky ones, if you receive my meaning.
Equus, I would think, would be quite challenging to actually bring off in a professional manner.
It's a little easier than I thought it was going to be. Don't be misled by that. It's hard enough. But there are parts of it that I was not sure how I was going to make work, and I found out Schaefer wrote it to work. I don't have to worry about it. It works anyway.
So you feel pretty positive about bringing it across, bringing
yeah.
off the production.
Yeah, I sure do.
And well, he should. The production, which opened last weekend and has performances this Friday and Saturday, is compelling theater. The University of Alaska Fairbanks Drama Association production is a gem.
Eck.
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 Karen McPherson in Fairbanks. Last Monday night at 10 p.m. was the deadline for miners to register claims located on federal land before October 21, 1976. In spite of much advance notice of the closing date and extended hours provided by Bureau of Land Management offices, some miners put off filing until literally the last possible minute. According to Land Records Officer Bowman Hinckley, five people showed up at the Fairbanks office at 9:57 p.m., 3 minutes before the 10 o'clock closing time. What would have happened if those five people had arrived at 10 o'clock or 10:01?
Number one, we locked the door. At 10 o'clock, we just sort of took a little Allen wrench, locked the door, and that's it. They couldn't get in. But let's just say that a person could then came crashing, hurtling in through the window. Well, the machine would have been stopped, and we would have been able to timestamp it. The timestamp, you know, clicks on minute by minute. And we just say, sorry, you're late. The claim is deemed abandoned.
BLM has said that any unfiled claim would be considered abandoned. And if a miner is found mining on an unfiled area, they would be charged with trespass. To avoid that possibility, on Monday, nearly 500 miners did make it in before closing time. Some folks came in with old maps, possibly from the 40s, Hinckley thinks. One man flew in from Prudhoe Bay to file the required affidavit of labor, and another person came in from Salt Lake City to file his claims. But most people were miners from the interior of the state.
There were a lot of very interesting people that showed up. In fact, some people that did record their claims, who I would have expected probably wouldn't have bothered, you know, wouldn't have bothered because of one more, you know, bureaucratic entanglement, but just because they wouldn't have made themselves aware of it or even particularly care about being made aware of it.
Do you expect that the interest in gold and the increased price in gold has prompted some people to want to make sure they've really got their claim?
Yes. I think that a lot of they want to make sure they're protected, plus I think that's the reason for a lot of, you know, newer mining claims being filed, too.
Hinckley expects more people will be in soon to file on recent claims. Claims located after October 21, 1976, must be filed within 90 days after staking, and Hinckley feels that more people are now becoming aware of the value of a good claim, particularly given the increasing importance of the word precious when referring to precious metals. Karen McPherson in Fairbanks. The Alaska Public Forum held its Fairbanks television town meeting Tuesday night from Anchorage. And for local residents, the reviews aren't really mixed, either on the event as television or as a public hearing alternative. As television, it wasn't the slick production many people expected from the well-paid San Francisco company. It wasn't even on a par technically with most local TV. But it's not the shaky camera work, the hard-to-read character generator, or the poor audio that was the primary concern. It's the program itself. Were the questions properly framed to enable yes-no responses? Was the moderator adequately informed on the issues, the state and the community of Fairbanks? Was much gained from the session that wasn't known beforehand? And was the question of how to use the state's capital improvement funds adequately addressed? It was, after all, that issue which prompted the town meeting. Ted Lane, a member of the Fairbanks City Council, was one of four Fairbanks representatives on the seven-member panel.
Well, I think there was a general fuzziness about what we were trying to do. When I went down, it was my understanding that we were talking about the state capital improvement program.
Mm-hmm.
And I was prepared to talk about many aspects of the capital improvement program. The program itself dealt almost exclusively with issues that were of specific interest to the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities, and most specifically road and transportation issues.
Mm-hmm.
And while that's important, it certainly is not the total public facilities issue.
Additionally, Lane pointed out that time was spent compensating for others' lack of background.
I think we spent a considerable amount of time, and maybe this is just part of the process, explaining to the moderator and other members of the panel what the situation in Fairbanks was all about.
Although Lane felt that moderator Daniel Shore's lack of knowledge about the state carried the advantage that he, quote, carried no emotional baggage on the issues, formulating the issues was difficult without an Alaskan perspective. Other local residents, non-panel members, were not so generous. One caller into a commercial radio talk show Wednesday morning stated that he hoped Shore's check could be canceled. Richard Allison, one of the 200 people calling in their yes-no responses to the questions posed, was a bit more generous.
In a way, I tend to think that an Alaskan who was more familiar with the issues might have posed more meaningful questions. He would have been less involved in educating himself than he would have in eliciting questions that were really meaningful.
A number of people felt that participation was probably increased by having voter anonymity. Quote, usually it's the same people that go to all the meetings. That's the observation made by non-voter Esther Hackney, wife of panel member Senator Glenn Hackney. And it's a sentiment echoed by others. But while participation in numbers may have been greater due to the system used, in which it was incumbent upon those people who had agreed to vote, either with a consensor device or by home telephone, to actually do so, the electronics also had a drawback. Here's voter Allison.
The business of allowing people to participate at all electronically is limited by its nature. You can't ask them to express a five-page opinion. You can only ask something that can be answered by a yes or no, and that in itself is a limit to idea exchange.
Fairbanks North Star Borough Mayor John Carlson, a panel member, stated both on the program and in a later telephone interview that he didn't think much new information was generated. There were no surprises, commented Carlson, an opinion echoed by Councilman Lane. Carlson felt that there were more important issues that were not addressed when moderator Shore would skip over some of the previously prepared questions in favor of others of less local import. In general, he said, the program and its unrealized potential left him feeling, quote, frustrated. Telephone voters, when asked if the program had made a contribution toward guiding government toward how to spend money, overwhelmingly said no, the program had not contributed. In contrast, consensor voters were more generous. When asked if the electronic forum was better or worse than traditional public hearings, that group overwhelmingly voted that the program was better. Mayor Carlson felt the program demonstrated the possibilities for alternatives to the traditional and that variations could be attempted on a local level. For example, there could be a hearing in which there was both an audience as well as call-in or computer voters. That would be a feeling of real life lacking from the public forum broadcast, as well as enabling more people to give their input into the decision-making process. The value of the television town meetings may, then, lie not in any impact the programs may or may not have on state spending, but in exposing the public and decision-makers to the possibilities of better organized and more relevant combinations of electronic and traditional modes for public hearings. Karen McPherson in Fairbanks. Although there was a runoff election for a borough assembly seat last night, the election isn't over yet. Voters will have to wait until Friday to know how their trip to the polls affected the outcome. By then, the 538 question and 130 absentee ballots will be counted. In the October 2nd election, those ballots made a difference, reversing the apparent lead of challenger Andy Carella to second place behind incumbent Kevin Herron, with a margin of 33 votes separating the two. The voter turnout was high, 17.36%, compared to an average of 15-18% in runoff elections, and emotions were high as well. Carella, who left his own assembly seat to campaign against Herron, stated that he felt the incumbent was a menace to the community. In all, 6,119 votes have been counted, and Carella shows a 151-vote lead. It remains to be seen whether that lead will hold through Friday when the 668 outstanding ballots are included in the tally. Karen McPherson in Fairbanks. Tonight at 7 p.m. in Fairbanks, all three TV stations will be airing the Alaska Public Forum-sponsored television town meeting. Only those people hooked up to the new cable service or with home videotape recorders will have a choice on the tube. Given this monopoly of the airwaves, one would think that much advanced publicity and information would have been distributed to the stations, the news media, and perhaps especially the public. Trying to get information on the so-called town meeting made the event seem more clandestine than public. Depending on whom you ask, there are either 361 or 286 Fairbanks residents who will be responding to the questions posed on the program, some of them dialing in from their homes, either yes or no, and others who will gather at the Civic Center to record their responses on a consensor, a computer-like device with a name that makes it seem like something where everyone must agree for the machine to function. The question of just how many people involved is just one aspect of the confusion. And ironically, both of those different figures were from reporters at the Fairbanks Daily News Miner. Two different reporters. Last week, calls to the public forum office in Anchorage yielded less information than that. In an attempt to discover who from Fairbanks would be on the panel, as well as who the respondents would be, I called that office several times. At first, people there, and remember that's the group that is responsible for these broadcasts, denied that anyone from Fairbanks would be involved at all. By the third call, I was finally told that Borough Mayor John Carlson and Ted Lane, on behalf of City Mayor William Wood, would both be participants. Additionally, there would, the woman thought, be two legislators, but she couldn't find their names. The local Legislative Affairs Office had no information until this morning, and neither did the governor's representative in Fairbanks. That office did provide the name of the woman who was supposed to be the local coordinator. I tried to reach her, but she wasn't at home. The Fairbanks Chamber of Commerce has fielded a number of calls from people wanting to know what's going on, but they don't know either. One of the TV stations airing the program received no promotional material, unlike the other two stations, and until yesterday afternoon didn't know where the program would be originating. A check of the information packet provided by the public forum to the stations revealed a two-page biography of Daniel Shore and a reprint of an article about the consensor device, both dated October 11th, and a two-and-a-half-page summary about the town meetings, plus a handout on the selection of the citizen participants. They were dated October 16th, just 5 days preceding the first meeting in Juneau. That's hardly much lead time. The participants themselves, who were first approached about a month ago, only got a bright canary foldout with preliminary voting directions, and were told there would be more contact later. With all the money being spent on the programs, $360,000 for the media contract alone, one would expect more advance and more thorough information. The public information issued from the public forum has been so slight as to be unnoticeable. One wonders what the impact will be from the public responses. Karen McPherson in Fairbanks. Jerry Carter, Teddy Kennedy, Jerry Brown, John Connolly, George Bush, Ronald Reagan, Howard Baker, Ed Clark, and John Waterman all have one thing in common. They're running, or may be running, for President of the United States. But one of these would-be candidates is an Alaskan, a Fairbanks resident, John Waterman. Local voters first became aware of Waterman when he ran for a seat on the school board in the October 2nd municipal election, his only previous attempt at running for an elected office. His campaign platform was based on recreational drug use and explicit sex education in the schools. He was defeated after receiving 1,598 of 7,711 votes cast. Why had he decided to run for president? Said Waterman,
"It's something I've been thinking about for a long time."
What makes you feel that you're qualified for the office of President of the United States?
Well, I figure it's an office that either all men are qualified for or no men, you know, or human beings. You know, I don't mean to make sound sexist. I think that if anybody's qualified that, you know, to like control, you know, to have the final say on whether you push the button like in a nuclear war, you know, then there's a good argument for to say a lot of people are qualified.
Although he doesn't yet have a platform, he says it's a little early for that, he does have a campaign slogan.
"Voice of Tomorrow would be the name of my platform, maybe, or like the way, I think it was New Frontiers or something, was John F. Kennedy's, or the Great Society with Lyndon Johnson. The Voice of Tomorrow is the only catchword I've thought of lately, and that would be because I'm 27 years old. So, you know, whether anybody likes what I have to say or whether anybody agrees with me, I am part of the Voice of Tomorrow."
His age is important, given the federal requirement stating that a person must be at least 35 years of age to serve as president. Even if he happened to win the election, he still wouldn't be the legal age by the time of the inauguration.
I don't envision that being any problem, because that's like saying the person who won. Well, yeah, it is a problem. It is a problem. Yeah, but still, I get around that because I think that if I won, the same people who elected me wouldn't stand for me not to serve.
The people he expects to form a groundswell once he's elected haven't even started to ripple yet in support of his unofficial candidacy.
"I don't think I need much more support than the support I got, which is just, you know, my own conscience says go."
Waterman admits,
"I'm not really doing very good in that department."
In spite of that situation, Waterman's attitude is remarkably positive. He hadn't expected to do well running for school board, but this campaign is different.
"This time I think I'm going to be operating on the assumption that more people take me seriously than I expect, and that there may be more people out there in the United States who have lots of sympathies with me than I or you or anyone is even aware of. I think that if I had the amount of money to spend that the other candidates have, I think I'd probably take the contest hands down."
That's John Waterman and his yet unfiled candidate for the office of President of the United States. I'm Karen McPherson in Fairbanks. Some elections, especially runoff municipal elections, are pretty ho-hum. But Fairbanks North Star Borough residents are being treated, or maybe tricked, as far as tomorrow's runoff election for an assembly seat is concerned. Kevin Herron, the young incumbent, is being challenged by a man who left his own assembly seat to enter the race, hoping to unseat Herron. The challenger is Andy Corella, who is running a campaign reminiscent of times past. Prior to the October 2nd election, in which Herron received 33 votes more than Corella, Corella placed a full-page, two-color ad in the Fairbanks Daily Newsminer. The color used in the ad was red, and the text proclaimed, quote, "It's enough to make you see red." He He was referring to stands taken by Assemblyman Herron, and the accusations ran from spending time in the borough offices to working for the Fairbanks Environmental Center. Asked about the $900-plus ad in a Meet the Candidates-type program aired on KUAC-TV and FM this weekend, Carella said,
"I have no apologies for it."
Herron responded that some of the information was factually incorrect and that, quote, "I'm not running against Andy, and I think it's important that we work for something rather than against something." He did acknowledge that
politics is quite a bit of emotion anyway, and I think that there are some people that did emotionally get wrapped up in what was said there and didn't look critically at the record, and that is what disturbed me.
After last Saturday's local newspaper came out, Herron must be a good deal more disturbed. Carella had done it again. This time, the full-page ad was divided into two columns. The left side contained two boxes, one with the words "Apply Here Food Stamps," and the other labeled "Unemployment Benefits." Beneath the boxes were line drawings of smiling people ostensibly waiting in line. The right side of the page had black and white photographs of construction projects and people working. The ad proclaimed, quote, "If you prefer the right side of the big picture, vote right next Tuesday." Carella himself comes from a poor farming background, and his family received aid. The ad implies that he opposes relief programs, though he claims this is not the case, and that the ad is supposed to reflect his concern for employment, a concern reflected by Herron as well. Carella advocates development in big business, including tax subsidies, while Herron advocates, quote, "quality development, the encouragement of small businesses, and is not for tax subsidies." It's been characterized as a development environmentalist split, reflective of differences in the community as a whole. That dynamic is part of what makes Fairbanks an interesting place to live, but Carella doesn't think so. In a telephone interview, he made this statement.
"If I am not elected, we will have an environmentalist, dyed-in-the-wool environmentalist on the assembly."
Although Carella maintained in the same interview that, quote, "Mr. Herron doesn't see the same need for representative government that I do," it would seem that, on the contrary, he doesn't, or he would have campaigned for the assembly seat that he held, rather than switching seats in an attempt to oust the only member of the assembly with views that differ, as he sees it, significantly from his. Herron ends his radio spots with, quote, "vote for the one who listens," and representative assembly, after all, means just that, on behalf of the people. Fairbanks voters will get their chance tomorrow to decide which candidate will give them representation. Karen McPherson in Fairbanks.